Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. Today, I have with me Sue Winters. She's a master and a student of Reiki. I met Sue some 30 years ago in Nelson, British Columbia, where I was first learning to be a Reiki master, and she was a very enthusiastic student, and she can tell you more about that when she tells her story. And now Sue and I have connected again after all these years in a wonderful place, Sedona, Arizona. And for a lot of you who know Sedona, it is really an interesting and very beautiful place. I have my own attitude about Sedona, which we can maybe talk about later. We'll see. But in the company of Sue, who was my local guide and allowed me to see another part of Sedona, I realized that I had to, as Yo-Yan would say, reevaluate my theory and base what I know about Sedona on my experience, rather than my theories. So I'm softening a bit towards Sedona, and I really want to thank Sue for that. And I met a lot of really great people in Sedona, which was also really heartening. So I'm just back from my little jaunt in Sedona and enlivened by it. I really have appreciated my time there. So Sue, thank you very much for your guidance in Sedona and for your getting me up there. And I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show. And I'm really appreciative that you made the trip up to Sedona to talk to a few people that I got together who some were my Reiki students, dear friends, and others that I'd never met either. So I'm grateful you came, because I also got a chance to meet these people that are here in Sedona that I didn't know yet.
Really? Well, wonderful. And so, so you're still there, and I'm back at home. And I'd love to give the listeners sort of the full spectrum of your Reiki experience by asking you to talk about your Reiki story, where it began, and what year, and so on.
It began in Canada in 1980, when I met Rick Faulkner, who, of course, you know very, very well. And Rick and I had mutual friends. I asked Rick what he did, and he started talking about Reiki, which I had never heard of and didn't know anything about. But I was just blown away, because my entire life I've been wanting to find a way to connect more to, I guess we could say, God, because I don't have a better word, but the divine intelligence that's out there. And I thought, at least on a healing level, that you had to be born with those abilities. You couldn't learn them. And he assured me that you could open to them. So I said, great. When can I take your class? So I ended up going to his summer camp, which was a teepee up in the Kootenays. It was absolutely stellar and fun. And, you know, with the summer kitchen and open air and everything. And I was his first student after he became initiated by Hawaii Takata, and I was the only person in the class. So I had I had all of Rick's attention, and it was a phenomenal experience. One of the things I remember the most is that my intuition blossomed immediately upon being initiated, and I started hearing things. So that was pretty wonderful. Then I brought him.
Excuse me, Sue. That was just after your first degree?
Well, what happened? Not even finishing first degree. For instance, I went down to, is it Caslo, the little town
yeah.
there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Went down to Caslo to get a snack during the day, you know, in between lessons with Rick. And I was sitting in the car, and I was doing Reiki on my wrist, because I was a photographer at the time. And had a dark room, and I was lifting, you know, 1 gallon jugs of chemistry with one wrist, one hand, and I had developed a kind of a swelling on my wrist. It was very painful. So I was, you know, practicing my new skills and doing Reiki on my list. And I was sitting in the car, and in front of me comes a small child, maybe 7 or 8, and he's riding his bike across the street, and his little black dog was following him. And in my head, I heard Spike. And I thought, what the heck is that? And then about 10 seconds later, the young kid yells, "Come on, Spike."
Wow.
So it was the beginning of my intuition. I hate to use psychicness because that has so many connotations, but my intuition started to blossom immediately upon being initiated. And it kept developing over all these years and has become an amazing tool for connecting to people on a much deeper level. So I also remember that in the first initiation with Rick, the first time I ever put my hands on anyone, I felt like someone was pouring warm water through my body. And it came down and started at my toes, and it filled me up to the solar plexus level, and then it cut itself off.
Wow.
Whoa, what's that? And then the next day I had a chance to work on another person, and as soon as I put my hands on the second person, the water flowed in, starting at the solar plexus, and then topped me off up at the crown. And I felt that that was the Reiki energy filling me so that it would then overflow, you know, as it should,
right,
when I was working on someone. And I've never felt that sensation since then.
Wow. Maybe it was just the beginning of a kind of prime the pump kind of thing.
Yeah, fills you up, stores in your solar plexus, exits your hands when someone draws it through you. It was a very simple, you know, a physical sensation.
Uh-huh.
It was great. So Rick said, you know, if you want to start get a class together for me, I'll come to Gibson's. He was on Cortez Island. I was in Gibson's. And I said, yeah, I'll get some people together, and then we can do second degree for me. So that was in 83. We had a huge class, I think, like he said the other day, 30 people and an overflow of 27 or something. So I did second degree in 83. And in 89, I moved from Canada to Sedona. I was drawn there because of it being a very big spiritual center. And the intuition that had developed through the use of Reiki over those years was pushing me towards Sedona, and I knew that I had to go down there. So, as you know, Sedona has been known as sort of the metaphysical capital of the United States for a long time, and there were some pretty interesting experiences. As far as intuition growing inside me, it was a great test, because what I needed was to truly trust in things that I was hearing. And what I found here in Sedona was a lot of manipulation on people's parts for whatever their purposes were. And people actually telling me that what I was intuiting was not correct, where in fact it really was. And they were trying to take advantage. That was an interesting experience, but that was the learning curve for me in Sedona, was to truly pay attention and trust what I was getting.
Oh, interesting. Well, so how did second degree influence your development, do you think?
Well, of course, when I first took second degree, I thought, well, this is not going to work. Are you kidding? This can't be. I mean, you just, you know, visualize the person between your hands and go for it. So I thought, okay, I'm going to give it a try. I was trying to think of somebody that I could work on. So I had just found out that a tree planting crew member buddy of mine had been diagnosed with bone cancer.
Uh-huh.
And he was, gosh, I think he was in the Kootenays or someplace too, but I was, you know, on the coast. So I couldn't physically do a Reiki on him. So I sent him a letter and asked him if I could do second degree. He said yes.
Uh-huh.
So I did 4 treatments, one a day for 4 days, and I wrote down my conclusions and how my hands felt and what I felt. And So then I wrote him a letter, and it was very strange. I put the letter in the mail in Gibson's on a Friday afternoon, and then Saturday morning, oh no, he was in Toronto. On Saturday morning, he calls me because he got the letter. Now, how can that be? It was very bizarre. Anyway, he read what I had written about what I felt about different parts of his body. He agreed with all of it, and he started to laugh because I had said, you know, there's a cold spot on your ribs right here, and I described where it was exactly. I said, to me, cold means that those tissues are so depleted that they don't even have the energy to draw the Reiki energy to heal themselves. And, of course, the body will go into homeostasis if you give it a chance. So I'm giving it the chance, and it's not taking it. So I'm really worried about that spot.
Uh-huh.
And he's laughing, asked me to describe the location more, and I'm trying to figure out why he's laughing at me. Anyway, it turns out that his lung had collapsed right exactly at that place 2 weeks prior, and it still hadn't healed yet.
Wow.
So that's all it took for me to realize that Reiki was, second degree, was one of the most powerful tools possible. And from that point on, especially when I got to Sedona, I had been, the intuition that was coming to me was leading to all kinds of information, and one of the bits of information which I was sharing with a friend who was a budding sort of a psychic reader was that I was being drawn to a particular person to get to know on this planet. And my big question was, why is spirit pointing me towards this person? Very big question. And this person was well known, and there's no way in my life that I would ever get to know this person. And it turns out that they said this person is really important to the planet, but his emotional body is very dark. He needs healing. We're begging you to do meditation, do two second-degree treatments on him every day for a month to try to alleviate this emotional darkness that surrounds him, because he's a voice for the planet, and we need his voice. I thought, oh, why me? Anyway, I did, and when I talk about second degree and Reiki in general being a connection between people on a level that's beyond just the physical, I can tell you that I did what they asked me to do for an entire month, and I wrote down notes. And within the first week of making this connection, which I would say was completely on a soul level, I started seeing in my head where he was, what he was doing, and who he was talking to, and what they were talking about. And I wrote all this down. And later I found someone who knew him personally, and it turned out everything that I picked up on was absolutely, completely true, including the names of the people.
Wow.
And, very long story, but I did that work. Of course, it was mind-boggling to me as well. And later I met him, and later I worked for him for 5 years. And he proceeded to leave us. He died unexpectedly. And within 2 years after his dying, I met a most wonderful, incredible woman from England who I'm visiting in Phoenix, and she's a spiritual medium, and she's the real deal. And I had a session with her, which I really didn't think I needed in any way, but she identified him by name, by the date of his death, by his occupation, the clothes he wore, what he did, the history that I had with him. And from that point on, since 1999, we've had 3 or 4 conversations with him from the other side, about life on the other side.
Uh-huh.
And it's been a phenomenal experience understanding exactly what happens as people die, where they go, what they learn, how they evolve, and all of that. So Reiki has developed me, opened me intuitively to this other level of communication, which I feel very blessed about. And Some of the ways that I've used Reiki to connect is, for instance, there was a young woman that called me up and said she would like to have some Reiki sessions. She was pregnant, and she was really concerned about the baby because the baby was not growing and not gaining weight. The doctor was concerned. So I went over to her house, and I did some Reiki on her, and I said, would you mind if I try to communicate with the baby and find out why he's not growing? She said, no, please, please. So I started talking to the baby, and it was completely obvious. It was like somebody screaming in my ear, protein, protein. I said, okay. So I asked the mother, I said, what's your diet like? Are you eating enough protein? She says, I don't eat protein. I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat any protein. So I encourage her to find some form of protein that she could eat that would not go against her, you know, her beliefs. And we came up with tuna. So she decided to eat tuna. And, you know, tuna is better than nothing. And by the next appointment with the doctor, her baby had put on several ounces, and from that day on, he continued to gain properly the amount that he should gain when he was developing. And that was really great that I could help at that level by using this as a form of communication.
Uh-huh.
And then my parents and with my grandmother, I also had experiences communicating with them as they were passing and helping them pass.
Mm-hmm. So before we get into those stories, which are, I'm sure, very interesting, I'm just wondering, I went, you know, about this word communication, because it feels like that's a really big theme in not only in your life, but in your life with Reiki. And it just is great to hear that you were awakened to a part of yourself that was waiting in the wings, so to speak, and Reiki just allowed it to come forth and,
mm-hmm.
and be used in a really wonderful way. And I'm wondering, in your communication, did you ever feel it to be spooky or scary for you at all?
No, it was very comfortable.
Uh-huh, great.
It was very comfortable. It was heartwarming. There's something about the Reiki energy that is the connector to others, and it facilitates a greater understanding of that other person that you're working with. And I think it fuels a divine love, and I'm not talking about a gushy, you know, cliche word love, but I mean a really, truly deep soul consciousness kind of love that exists in all of us. And if we could reach that inside ourselves and then reach it inside the other people that we communicate with, whether it's our families or even people that we don't like, then it would turn the planet around. And I think Reiki is the connector. It has been for me. It's allowed attitudinal healing to occur, which
uh-huh.
I think is definitely the forerunner to physical healing.
Right. Well, that's an interesting statement. Can you say more about that?
Well, I believe very much that when you're angry, when you're in fear, when you're stressed, when you're
Hello?
I'm here. I'm thinking of a better word.
I just thought, I've lost her. Sorry to disturb your train of thought there.
No, I was trying to find the word.
Oh, okay, go for it.
when you're imbalanced or uncentered,
uh-huh.
right? It creates around you basically what you're feeling and thinking. And with Reiki and connectedness, comes a sense of calm and centeredness, and I think stillness inside. Stillness inside is what brings us all to our true divine selves, and then that self can go out and express itself in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think Reiki gives me the stillness, and now, see, I've even lost what your question was.
My question was it ever scary or, was it ever scary or kind of alarming, the things that happen?
No, not a bit.
Right.
Because, a sense of unity, I would say, a sense of that deep divine love, connectedness, and always when I'm communicating like that, feel a sense of being at home, actually, more in myself than when I'm running around in the busy world.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I understand. So you stayed in Sedona for a number of years. When did you move down there?
Kind of, 89. What was it?
89.
Mm-hmm.
89. And then...
So I came to you before 89.
Yes.
You and I had our days together before 89, and then moved to Sedona, stayed until 93. Then moved to the Aspen, Colorado area in 93. Stayed there till 2002, January 2002, and then. Since then, I've been going basically back and forth, spending, depending on the season, spending the winter in Sedona and spending the summers up in Colorado.
That's interesting.
Well, I'm a temperature person.
I see.
I like to be warm.
And you became a master during the move to, right after you moved to Aspen, is that what I remember?
I did. I reconnected with Rick and asked him about the master level, and I flew to Vancouver and took a ferry over to where he is and spent some days with him and worked with him for that level.
Uh-huh.
It was great.
And obviously, at this point, your motivation was to... just go further into Reiki, or to be able to teach, or both, or what motivated you to become a master at this point?
I had, along the attitudinal healing line and along the development line, I feel, and I felt then and still feel now, that I would rather empower people to take care of themselves and be their own healer, if you want to use that word, than to have a serious practice. I really felt that that teaching was what I wanted to do, so that those people could treat themselves, their family, their pets, their friends.
Uh-huh.
And because I traveled a lot, having a practice wasn't going to work either.
Right.
I also felt that when I was working on people, they became very dependent on me, and I wanted them to be, their own independent self. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, I think that's pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, did you find that to be true then when you began to teach?
For some, yes. For some, they they would look at me and say, "Well, I'm not any good at it. Would you do it?" And I say, "No. Hey, you just took the class. You can do it. You need to practice. You can do it as well as I can do it. Come on." So, you've had that experience, I'm sure, where everybody defers to you.
Uh-huh.
But I want people to stay on their own. I want them to be independent. I want them to care for themselves, create their own lives. You know, if their dog is limping, then they should work on their dog. And don't call me. You've got the skills. You've got the desire. You've got the training. So I wanted to empower people, and I wanted to help them shift in their attitudes and their belief systems too. And I think that Reiki was, as far as them being a student, was the way to go, rather than me taking care of them.
Uh-huh. Well, that's great. So, then did you teach in Aspen?
I did a little bit. You know, I let it come to me. I didn't do it really as a business or really aggressively. I would get to know someone and they would express an interest and it would go that way. But it wasn't me promoting myself and putting classes together. It was more like suddenly there'd be somebody that wanted to learn. It was more organic and more naturally flowing.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. And so then in this time between your second degree and your master level, and you were assisting people with this way that you could communicate, did you feel that you were tapping into your own wisdom, to some universal wisdom, or to them, or maybe in some instances one of the other? I mean, I'm just wondering where this communication felt like it was coming from.
Both, I think. If you want to use the word higher self, yes. And their higher self and or guides and masters, yes. And sometimes just them on a soul level. I have to tell you the experience that I had with my mother.
Okay.
She had been in the hospital for a little exploratory surgery. She had a spot on her lungs. They couldn't get to it with a needle, so they wanted to do, you know, a full operation where they had to break the rib, go in and look at this thing and find out if it was malignant or not. Well, it turned out it wasn't malignant. It was fine. I spoke to her on the phone after she came out of surgery, and as did my son, who was about 7 then. And when we hung up, my son looked at me and he said, "Mom, she's going to die." And I said, "Oh," and he was very intuitive too. I said, "Oh, no, she's going to be fine." Well, within 48 hours, she was in a coma with massive septicemia all through her body. So I stopped everything. I was in Sedona. She was in Washington State. I stopped everything in my world, and I did Reiki on her pretty much nonstop all day long for days. Then this is like Sunday. So Wednesday comes along, and I'm doing Reiki and doing Reiki, and I hear in my head my mother's voice. And she said, "If you're going to keep doing that on me, then I want you to do that to help release me, not to keep me here."
Wow.
I know. And I went, "Oh, God. Okay." I thought about it for a couple of minutes and realized that I didn't have a choice. This is what my mother wanted, and I had to do it for her. So from that point, then later on that afternoon, I spoke with my father, and I asked him to tell her, you know, that I loved her because I wasn't there. And of course, she was unconscious. And he said he would. And then I proceeded to work on her day and night for several more days with the intention that she be released and go on. So she died, of course. And we flew up to Washington, and we were at the memorial service, and it was an open casket. And I've never, ever seen a dead body in my entire life. And I'm standing there with my father, and I said, "Oh, my God, Dad." I said, this is so strange. I mean, there's no life here. This is an empty shell." And he said, "Yeah, it's been like that ever since last Wednesday." And that was the day she asked me to help her release.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of blew my mind. So I think it was on the Wednesday that she actually left, and it was several days later that her body actually finally succumbed to, life support and all of that. Then there was another experience where my grandmother was passing, and my mother, this before my mother had died, she called me up and said, "Grandmother's not going to live through the rest of the day." And she was too far away for me to drive there in time. And I was in BC, so I went to the coast, and I was sitting on one of those big driftwood logs out there. And I linked up with her with second degree, and I could feel her, I could see her, I could hear her. And she said, I just don't want to go. And I said, why? She said, because I really haven't accomplished anything in this life. I feel like I haven't done anything. So I reminded her of all the things that she had done. And I told her that her husband was there waiting for her. And did she see him there? And she said, yeah, I see him there. I said, well, you've done this, and we all know it, and we appreciate you, and we love you, and it's time for you to go. And so she walked away from me, and at the time she walked away, I mean, I had tears flowing down my face, and the beach noises and the seagulls and all of that, I could hear all that, and I was very emotional. The time she walked away and she actually left, it felt like somebody had reached into my solar plexus, and I had a bungee cord attached to me, and it was stretching, 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 and then it snapped.
Wow.
And when it snapped, I couldn't hear anything. There was no surf. There were no birds. And all my emotion went to peace, and I quit crying. It was beautiful. Later on that night, I talked to my mother, and she died. Because I looked at my watch. She died 20 minutes before the snap. And my mother said, it was really weird. It was like she was still in the room for another 20 minutes, and then she was gone. So these timing things just confirm to me that the communication is real, and their presence here on the planet is true until that moment that they move away.
Wow, what amazing experiences!
They continue to happen. I appreciate them because I feel that there's no really separation between all of us, whether we're alive or dead. That it's a continuity of life, a continuity of love and appreciation that we get a chance to experience. And for me, Reiki was the key to unlock the door to experience these things.
And have your students developed this kind of communication?
Some of my students have noticed an increase in their intuition. One student's ability to be very creative at the piano has improved. So I consider that maybe their crown chakras are more open, creative juices are flowing faster, or something along those lines. That was interesting.
Yes. Well, in my experience, Reiki just opens up whatever our gift is. And another one of my little theories is that as masters, we are connected to those people who are kind of copacetic or connected to us through other, through maybe life experiences or our gifts. And so I'm just wondering if you have had students who have, really connected through their intuition and in some way were really your students in the sense of all that you received out of Reiki.
I think our connection, at least with the people that I know, the people that are close to me on the planet, I think we're all sort of part of a soul family, in that we've been here before together in various relationships, and in various time, historical times, you know, come back together.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I think it just enhances our relationship and closeness.
Uh-huh. So would you call these connections past lives?
Probably, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm a firm believer in past lives. Although there's a questionable theory. We'll never know, you know, we'll never really know these answers, but there's a concept that all of our lives are going on at the same time and we're just focused on one particular one at the moment.
Right.
And so as we might alter this one, we might be influencing others, past and future, because it really is no past and future. Anyway, that's all a big super concept that I can't even talk about because I don't get it. I don't really get it. It's just beyond my conception. But, yeah, I really do believe that everybody that we're close with in our lifetimes, we've had some sort of experience with before.
Mm-hmm. Well, to extend this to a sort of a theory in Reiki, and I want to just refer people back to last week's program with Yoyan about talking about theory and how our experience through Reiki practice alters our theories, or actually maybe even forms our theories of the universe. My theory at this point about past lives, and then is that we've had them and it's possible that we're experiencing all of our lives at the same time, mostly because what I feel is that there's a lot to be known about the dimension of time. And a lot of people think that time is just a linear yardstick by which we end up meeting each other, and that's very useful. So when you said, you know, we'll meet at 11 o'clock at the Crystal Center where we had our talk in Sedona on such and such a day, that allowed all of us to get together at the same time and do the gig.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, time is really a dimension. So there's, you know, our usual three-dimensional world. And then we have this fourth dimension, which is time. And in that, if we can see the spectrum of time of past, present, future, then and lengthen that to past lives and to future lives and all of that, then it can also be going on at the same time, because time can just be only in the present, you know, that it can just collapse. So if we, you know, pull this taffy out into, you know, a mile-long piece of taffy, it can also be put all together into one ball. That's my kind of...
And you can also bend one part to the other and have them touch.
Right, exactly. So that's my kind of analogy about time. So if in Reiki we get to know this dimension of time, which I feel like we do, then our next step is to be able to take responsibility, or to be able to be conscious about what we do and how we do meet, and what connections we have in that meeting. So, you know, this brings me to Reiki. So when I first went up and met Rick Bochner, actually, in 1979, I went up to the Kootenays with my grandmother, and, well, it wasn't actually the Kootenays, it was kind of the edge of the Okanagan Valley in BC, and I met all these Kootenayites, and as I called them, and I just felt like connected with them, and that was one of the first times I was ever conscious of this feeling. It wasn't the first time that I'd ever had it, but it was the first time that I was conscious of this kind of you know, like group feeling like that, like I was a part of the family. And one of the gals there, Jan, pointed that out to me. And when I went back the next summer and met them and got to know them, I just felt totally comfortable with them. A few years later, after being more educated in past lives and all the other esoteric theories that there were about the universe, somebody asked me, well, do you think that all of us here in this class of first degree were connected at some time in our past lives, and that we are just coming back, we are being called back together mm-hmm. by this initiation of Reiki?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I thought, mm-hmm. interesting thought. I never tied it all together like that before. And since then, I've been playing with my theory, experience thing, and come to the point where I don't actually know, I can't say definitively, but when I am in a large group of Reiki practitioners and we're sitting practicing together, I close my eyes, and what I see, you know, in the darkness behind my eye, you know, with my eyes closed, mm-hmm. is not, it's not darkness like scary darkness. It's like no light. And then all of a sudden, all these little lights start coming on, like the stars would turn on at twilight. As it got darker, you could see more and more stars. Mm-hmm. And realizing that there's this connectiveness with all these stars, and that we don't have to have threads connecting us, it just is. It just feels like this absolute universe where we know all, you know?
Exactly.
And we are all. And it's an amazing experience. And because of that, I just have this feeling that maybe Reiki has come into this world now and walked the path. If Reiki is an entity, so to speak, that Reiki has walked the path and come to the world at a certain time where we need to know that we are connected and that we can feel it and have a physical experience of that connection. And so that's where my theory and experience kind of join at this moment. And I'm wondering, have you had those same thoughts? And if you have, can you talk a bit about them for me? And yeah.
Well, Reiki, universal life energy, I believe is the consciousness that exists in all of us. And surely, if it's intensified in some way, it shows itself in that, in its true form, in that it becomes obvious that you have it, I have it, everyone has it, nature has it, rocks has it, birds, fish, everything has this energy in it, and it all becomes one unit. We are this energy.
Mm-hmm.
And the consciousness that exists everywhere, once you feel it, then you begin to, once you feel it in yourself, you start seeing it around you, you start feeling it in other people, you can't help but want the whole world to get the picture.
Uh-huh.
And realize that what you do to someone else, you're doing to yourself. I mean, that's an old cliche, but come on, it's really true. And yeah, I thought about it a lot. It's what connects us. It's what helps us evolve. And it's almost like time doesn't exist. It's like space exists. And in fact, they say on the other side that there is no time, it's just space.
Mm-hmm.
And very little of us physical body is really physical. It's water and all these other things that are unseen.
Right.
I remember going up to the Stein Valley for an event, and there were thousands of people there, and all the great, the Hopis, the Haiders, all the great Native American leaders were there for this sort of powwow on saving Stein Valley. And you really, really literally felt that everyone there had been on the Trail of Tears walk, that everybody that was wanting to save this forest had been united in some other lifetime on a similar campaign, or had been persecuted in the same way or whatever. I sure would like to see the world be much more conscious that every living thing around them is connected to them than they are. And then we would have a much different world where we would thrive and there wouldn't be the kind of greed and fear and everything else that exists today that causes the things that we have on the planet.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if that answered your question, but...
Yeah, it does. And sometimes I feel like... maybe I have a little bit of a phobia about being too airy-fairy, whatever that means. And at the same time, what reassures me are these experiences that I've had that I don't feel are my fantasy, but are a part of my experience of the world as I know it through Reiki. And that's one of my greatest gifts, I feel, is that Reiki gives us these physical experiences that challenge our theory of how the universe works or how the world is, and allows us to break those open and to create, you know, yet another theory or another way of holding what we know as our world until the next breakthrough, so to speak.
I agree, and I can give you an example that...
Okay, that'd be great.
Well, one night I had someone that wanted a second-degree treatment, and I said, okay, let's set it up for 10 o'clock tonight. I'd like you to be relaxed, you know, and you can be in bed if you want, whatever, but try not to be running around doing, you know, activities. They said, fine, fine. So 10 o'clock rolls around, and I'm waking up with second-degree, and I'm doing my treatment and everything. And I'm done, I go to bed, I get up the next morning, and I looked at my hands, Phyllis, and my hands were stained brown. Brown.
Weird.
Blobs of color on my hands, and I'm going, where did that come from?
Gosh.
And, I dye my hair, and I thought, well, it looks like hair dye, that's weird. It's like I put the hair dye on there and didn't wash it off, and it just stayed. Anyway, the next day I talked to these, there were two people, they were friends, and I was working on one of them, and I called up to see how she was feeling, and I said, so, how do you feel today? And, oh, I'm so sorry, we got so involved last night that I forgot that I was supposed to stop at 10 o'clock. We were coloring each other's hair. And I thought, whoa. Now that twisted my reality around.
Oh, fantastic.
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah, very.
I've seen so many things that allow me to realize that reality is not what we're taught. It's not what the media teaches us, or even doctors teach us. It's so far beyond. And I had another example. What was it? It left me. But I had another example of where... I had the experience in Sedona of being able to go to one of the Filipino psychic surgeons.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually went to him 3 or 4 times. And he really literally, you know, he was not a fake. He literally put his hand in my body and it didn't hurt. And at one point, I was sitting on the side of the massage table, and I put the palms of my hands out, and I said to him, I do Reiki, and I want to make sure that I don't have any blockages in my hands so that I have, you know, I can give the best I can to my clients. And uh-huh. So he took the palm of my hand, and with his index finger, he drew a line across the middle of the palm of my hand. And the skin opened up, blood starts gushing out everywhere. I can see the ligaments and the veins and the tissues and the muscles inside my hand there. I know. This is real now.
Okay.
Twisting your reality here, Phyllis. And he sort of, with his thumb and couple of fingers, he sort of, like he picked something out of the middle of my hand. It definitely was nothing physical. It was more like etheric. And meanwhile, the blood is, you know, flowing down between my fingers and hitting the massage table. And then with a cotton swab, he just wipes across the line that he's opened. The hand closes up, and that's that. Didn't feel a thing. Then within the next, and he did the other hand too. And then within the next 2 days, I'm walking across my floor in the middle of the night in Sedona in the dark, because I like to sleep outside under the stars. And I was walking across the floor to go to the washroom, and I stepped on a scorpion. Oh my goodness, that hurt. So I grabbed my foot, called my friend, he used to work for a doctor, and said, you know, what should I do? And, you know, you should get the poison out, then you're going to have a fever, and it's going to hurt, and swell, and turn colors, and heart palpitations, and da-da-da-da-da. 5 minutes later, the pain was gone, and went to bed. No heart palpitations, no fever, no swelling, no discolored foot, nothing. The Reiki took care of all of it.
Wow.
And I believe that he helped enhance the flow of the Reiki with the work that he did for me, too. And so it was quite an interesting experience. I also watched him work on my cat, who hadn't heard anything for many years. She was very old. She was like 20 years old. And she hadn't eaten well. She would throw up pretty much after every meal. So I held the cat under her armpits in front of him on the massage table. He opened up behind her ears. He opened up in the solar plexus area and pulled out something. She also had some kidney issues. He opened up and did something on one of the kidneys. And then he just took a piece of cotton and he closed up all the incisions, and the cat was fine, went home, and she never threw up another day of her life after that. And when I called her to dinner, she heard me. So what do you say?
Well, I'd say that stretches my own reality.
Well, see, I believe that the physical world is far beyond what we believe it is.
Uh-huh.
We can believe otherwise, and when we have experience, and it goes both ways, you know, we can believe otherwise and have the experiences, or we can have the experiences and then believe otherwise.
Uh-huh.
Take it from either direction. I just think Reiki for me has been the vehicle for allowing me to see reality completely different than the way I started out when I was a kid.
Uh-huh. Well, it brings us to a great closing for the show, Sue, and leaves me suspended sort of in
Uh-oh.
Space, which I think is a good thing, because it's always good to be out there knowing that you're safe, but not really understanding how you could be suspended in space without something underneath you. And that's
wow.
how I feel right now, so that's good.
What's underneath you, what's underneath all of us, is this connected consciousness of you know, I don't know what the creative intelligence really is.
Uh-huh.
But I believe that's the foundation.
And what do you mean by creative intelligence?
The universal life energy. It flows through everything on the planet and in the universe that has created itself over and over again as humans and natures and nature and birds and fish and horses and everything else. It's what if you want to use the word Reiki, if you want to use the word God, if you want to use the word consciousness, if you want to use electromagnetic, whatever, who knows what it really is? But I think that's what the foundation of life is, and what fuels us and moves us and helps us create and is evolutionary. It's all together the same thing.
Well, I'm sure that many Reiki practitioners who are listening to you would agree with you, and I certainly do. And it's very interesting to see that all of these concepts don't have are not
Separate.
some separate or are actually conflictual, even though sometimes it feels like they're conflictual, but they're all a part of the whole.
Oh, I believe they are.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, listeners, you are a part of the whole, and this has been Sue Winters, and this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, balancing form and essence.